Thanks so much, everyone, for being with us tonight. We're talking with Antonio Huneas and Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds Productions about a whole range of UFO topics. Still quite a bit to cover. I want to ask him about these Vatican announcements that seem to come out every couple of months about UFOs, about the Saudi conference that took place, included among the middle of all these world leaders, and then about the new files that are on online at the Open Mind site, the APRO files, the APRO bulletin, all these old, great old newsletters from years ago, and the kinds of secret nuggets that they might include. Also coming up, we'll go to the phones with your questions for my guests. Stay with us for more on Coast to Coast AM. Couple of quick questions, then we will open up the phones. I noticed that you guys now have on your Open Minds website the APRO bulletin, all these old bulletins from long ago, and I know I've got some of them, but I certainly don't have all of them, and I love going through it because it's like new information, you know. And I just wondered if you are in the process of mining these things for your own nuggets, Antonio.
Yeah, well, I'm particularly proud about that aspect of our website, you know, because it's the sort of thing, if I wasn't working here and I was just, you know, back in New York or something, and I saw that a website had posted, you know, a significant amount of the APRO bulletins, I would be delighted. I would be, like, downloading them like crazy. APRO, for those who don't know, not familiar with, it stands for the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, and it was one of the most important civilian UFO groups in the history of the United States, and not just in America, actually international too. And it was a group created originally in 1952 by a couple, Jim and Cora Lorenzen. And for many, many years, they were really like pioneers on the field. In fact, even MUFON started as an offshoot of APRO. So they really sort of wrote the book about how to investigate UFOs. And especially what makes them significant is that in the period going back to the 50s and 60s, when a lot of the other, even the American UFO groups like NICAP, which was the other big organization, they would hardly touch any cases dealing with aliens. You know, their concept of ufology was just sightings. Sightings of metallic objects, preferably by pilots. You know, that was sort of their choice because they had the credibility, you know, gap. They weren't trying to convince the media and the public at large that this was a credible subject. And also their emphasis, NICAP, was mostly on the government, on censorship, attacking the Air Force, all that sort of thing that we see still today. But APRO was very different. APRO, they basically stood away from any kind of conspiracies. But they went where other groups were not going. They realized that if these objects were flying, obviously someone was inside them. And these things were landing, and people were seeing occupants. And eventually, you know, it was not just close encounters of the third kind, but abductions. And they were one of the very first American groups that really dealt with all these humanoid cases, and that made it fascinating. So basically what happened is we acquired, as you probably know, or some of our readers know, that we acquired the archives, you know, of the late Colonel Wendell Stevens, who had vast archives, who was this famous UFO researcher that lived in Tucson. And, of course, APRO was based in Tucson. Not originally. They were formed in Wisconsin. But already in the late 50s, they moved to Arizona. And so Wendell had a substantial amount of the collection. Perhaps not every single issue. We're missing a few issues here and there. But we have certainly dozens and dozens, or hundreds probably, of them. I mean, this organization went on between 1952 and the late 80s. And it's a gold mine. It's an absolute goldmine of UFO cases. Many are famous. Probably the best known of all the APRO files would be the Travis Walton abduction case, you know, the famous abduction case that they did the movie Fire in the Sky. Well, that was a case investigated by APRO. On the current issue of Open Minds magazine, the one that is on the newsstands right now, I wrote an article of a very interesting abduction case, which is, I call it a forgotten classic. At the time, it was kind of known. It even made the front page of the National Enquirer, but that was way back. And this is known as the Sergeant Moody abduction case. And what's interesting about this incident is that the man who had this abduction experience was a sergeant at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico, of all places. You know, there's a lot of rumors about an incident that supposedly took place in Holloman in the late 60s or early 70s. Bob Emmenegger and others wrote about this. Well, this has nothing to do with that. But this man was stationed in Holloman, was a sergeant. And this happened while he was currently in the military. But he heard about APRO. No, actually, he didn't even contact APRO. There was a UFO magazine called Official UFO, which was a newsstand magazine. I remember it in the 70s. It was kind of pulp-looking, but actually some of the contents were pretty good. And so he wrote a letter to Bernie O'Connor, who was the editor of Official UFO. But they were in New York, and there wasn't much that they could do from New York. They didn't have the resources to fly or anything to Alamogordo, New Mexico. So they passed the tip to Lorenzen, to Jim Lorenzen. And they were in Arizona, and Moody was in New Mexico, so they were relatively neighbors. And immediately, Jim Lorenzen and Wendell Stevens, they actually flew. Wendell had a little plane, a Piper Astic plane, or one of those planes, and they flew. And they interviewed at length this man. And but at that time, of course, his name was not revealed. But eventually his name was revealed. And ironically, when the National Enquirer did the story, it was not debunked by the Air Force. In fact, the Enquirer quoted an officer who was the supervisor of Sergeant Moody, where he basically said, well, if Sergeant Moody says this happened, because Moody is a reliable man and he wouldn't lie. And this was kind of an official statement. But the Air Force did do one thing, though. Once the story got, the cat was out of the bag and the story was getting some traction, what they did is they, and this could have been coincidental or maybe not, who knows, but they transferred him. They transferred him to a NATO base in Spain. So he was kind of out of the reach of most UFO organizations and investigators. But that's a fascinating case. That's another one that people can see it. And, you know, it's a sort of a repetition of what we see today. Just here at my desk, I had in one of the upper bulletins where we're talking about a UFO sighting over New York City, seen by lots of people. And recently, right, we had those reports of New York City. But this was all the way back in the 70s or 60s. So researchers will have a field day. All the files are on PDF. They're very easily obtainable. They're listed by date, and they can download one newsletter at a time. So far, we've posted it up to the early 70s, but we have still many more, and we'll continue to post the rest of them. And then hopefully some of our readers will send us some of the missing copies. I believe, in fact, one reader already did that.
That's great. I mean, I've got a couple of issues, and they're just wonderful, wonderful detail. The real value of it being that you can see that there were incidents long ago that sort of mirror what's happening now, and you can use that to bolster a case or round it out a little bit. One other quick question for you, Alejandro, and then we'll go to the phones. It deals with the Vatican. It seems like the Vatican is, I don't know who's in charge there anymore, but every couple of months they come out with some UFO announcement, and I'm trying to figure out what's up with them.
It's interesting. They've really tackled astrobiology and in a scientific way. Paul Davies, a famous astrobiologist who has gotten a lot of media, he kind of criticized. He talked about how many religions out there are open to the idea of extraterrestrials, but that Catholicism in particular has a problem with it because of the reincarnation of Jesus, but they wouldn't believe in that, an original sin, and did Jesus die for the aliens? And instead of shying away, the Vatican has really kind of tackled this issue. They've held astrobiological symposiums where they've had Paul Davies and others come and talk about the science of it. And there has been, even in the background, if you look at the stories, a philosophical debate around extraterrestrials. But prior to even all of the theologians and the Jesuits behind the scenes coming to any conclusion that way, you do have Father Funes, who just a couple of years ago came out. He runs the Vatican Observatory, which coincidentally is also outside of Tucson, Arizona. And he said that it's okay to believe in extraterrestrials. He says, you know, in other interviews, he doesn't believe we're being visited right now, but most likely there are extraterrestrials, and it's okay for Catholics to believe in them. And he even went so far as to say there are space brothers, and that's what ran on the news. And he wrote a story regarding all of this in the official Vatican Journal. So the Vatican, interesting enough, is embracing this issue and this debate right now, scientifically and philosophically.
Well, I know that they've had a longstanding interest in it because back when I first started, they wrote to me to get some information about stuff going on here in Nevada. And I thought, wow. Anyway, maybe they know something we don't. I hope they let us know whatever it is. We're going to the phones. The phone lines are full. So a lot of people with questions for you. Wildcard line, Michael in Florida. Hi, Michael. What's on your mind?
Yes, very, very good morning to you. And there was an incident at Fort Bliss when I was working for Raytheon, that when I couldn't change jobs from SETI, it's not a military organization. It involves UFO law. And I think today, when now we know dark matter is real, and it's dead white, that a lot of those sightings in the 40s, and even in Jules Verne, were actually in other parts of the universe. They were actually magnified by dark matter. And I studied UFO law to try to get out of that job. And it's like a giant government sponge, George. I'm not sure if you know that. But I wanted to ask Alexandros, when he's talking about money for his magazine.
Hello? All right. Yes?
Is that what you were talking about?
Money for his magazine, meaning is there a subscription
money for
fee?
For the network, yes, sir.
Alejandro, I'm not sure. Alejandro,
yeah,
I'm not sure.
Of course, we would accept any money if you wanted to give money beyond a subscription. But I don't know what particular topic you might have been referring to.
And there's a lot of criminal defenses in the United States. In fact, even some of the today, like Britney Spears, claims to have been abducted and she was found not guilty. Are you aware of that?
No, I was not aware of that.
It's a big deal. I mean, you're acting like you're bankrupt, but I'm telling you, it's a big deal. And you can get money. I know where you can get some money just from my company, Milgo. When I tried to quit that job in 63 in Fort Bliss, they wouldn't let me quit, so I figured I was the original catcher in the rye. But you know something? I think we should give thanks for the Coast to Coast Network. I know you've been on since 96. Is that correct, George?
Yeah, I think that's when I think that's when this particular show started. It might even be earlier than that. Art Bell goes way back, but I'm not quite sure when this particular incarnation started. But yeah, I think you're right. I think Coast, I'm glad to be a part of it, and I think it does a public service by giving attention to these topics that no one else will. Michael, maybe you want to write to these guys at Open Minds Production and continue the conversation. I think they'd like to talk to you. We're going to Wildcard Line 2 now. Jim in Hollywood. Good morning, Jim.
Yes, strange, beautiful grass of green with your majestic silken seas, your majestic mountains I wish to see closer. May I land my kinky machine.
Is this a lyric or a poem that you're writing or what?
This is Jimi Hendrix.
Oh.
You had Robert Knight on there before. You
yeah.
Know, it would be absolutely imperative to have, you know, you know, beautiful, beautiful lines like. And, you know, I think George Norrie needs to, because George Norrie has a lot of UFO shows. And I think he needs to start playing more Hendrix music because Hendrix has tremendous. When you hear Up from the Skies, Third Stone from the Sun, and many other songs that he's written, because Robert Knight was right. Hendrix was almost not of this world. He really did something musically that a lot of people, you know, have to really stand in awe, you know. So, well, anyway, that's just my little thing. I have a question for you, though.
Sure.
For your guest. You know, this anti-gravity, I was watching something a couple of nights ago where you see this jet fighter on top of the USS Reagan just hovering. It was just hovering there, and then it took off. And I thought to myself, you know, this is the technology that these government has. And since this is just a lot of speculation about UFOs, and there's really no concrete evidence as to, you know, they haven't shown themselves yet. So we're all wondering, you know, when this is going to happen and all that. Isn't it possible that all these UFOs really are nothing else but these government, you know, they have this, you know, advanced technology of anti-gravity that they can, you know, build these kind of spacecrafts that look funny and just, you know, pop all over the world and whatever they want to and just, you know, scare the daylights out of out of the people, you know. So
I think it's a fair question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Afrofiles is a perfect example of that, because when you're going back into the 50s and you're going back, even if you go further, if you start to read Blue Book or Ruppelt's book, who worked for Blue Book, all of these sightings that happened in the late 40s and then the 50s were these extraordinary technologies of these, you know, solid metallic-looking objects doing extraordinary things. The sightings back then were similar to the sightings that we have of today. So to think of back in the 40s and the 50s of, you know, these anti-gravity secret craft, that's harder to conceive or you know, right now, who knows what the military has. They could have, just like Ben Rich, you know, our colleague Michael Stratt wrote about Ben Rich in our last magazine, and he said, you know, we've got the technology to take E.T. home. We probably have some extraordinary technology today, so it is hard to determine if some of these incredible craft that people are witnessing are black budget projects or not. But back in the 40s and the 50s, you know, it's a different story.
Yeah, Antonio, you could reflect on this as well. Yeah. You know that the government has encouraged this sort of thing. That, you know, the CIA has claimed that a lot of the UFO sightings were the SR-71 and U-2. They want people to accept the idea it's a secret plane as opposed to something from somewhere else.
I think the government has actually played it even both ways. There have been other occasions where they've kind of said, well, that, you know, they haven't said it openly, but they kind of intimated that that was a UFO because they, you know, if someone saw their stealth or some secret plane that people weren't supposed to see. So they played it both ways. But I totally agree with what Alejandro said. I mean, if you look at the history of this phenomenon, and of course, Jacques Vallée, who I'm sure you already had it as a guest, who recently came up with a book, Wonders of the Sky, I think it's called.
Oh, yeah.
It's all about historical cases. I did a lot of research on that myself. In fact, in one of the issues, back issues of Open Minds magazine, I had a whole article about UFOs and art and history. And some of these cases go all the way back to the time of the Roman Empire or whatever, you know, the Renaissance. There are objects that look like flying saucers that appear in Renaissance paintings. I published in our website a case, which is probably the first official document from Brazil, which was written by a prominent Brazilian Navy officer in the 1840s. And it was published in the official Gazette of the Empire of Brazil. And this was like in 1848. Aviation didn't even exist back then, I mean, other than hot air balloons. So, yes, while the cases that we see nowadays, maybe a percentage of them are probably secret aircraft, the further you go in time, that hypothesis doesn't work.
All right, Jim in Hollywood, thank you for the question. Thank you also for the lyrics. And I agree with you that any show that has more Jimi Hendrix in it is a good show. The phone lines are full. A lot of ground still to cover with my guests, Alejandro Rojas and Antonio Huneas. We're going to get to more of those questions right after this on Coast to Coast AM. I want to thank you for being with us tonight. We're talking about UFOs with Alejandro Rojas and Antonio Huneas of the Open Minds Production Organization. Phone lines are full right now. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. We're talking UFOs with Alejandro Rojas and Antonio Huneas. Going right back to the phones, Joseph in Pennsylvania. Good morning, Joseph.
Yes, good morning. This involves UFO propulsion. When I was stationed overseas, I was an apprentice in the electro-servo mechanics division. When I came back stateside, my associates and I used to do a lot of monitoring of MUFON reports. We noticed in those reports that there was very little, if any, radiation residue that was picked up when a UFO reportedly or allegedly landed, or at least in the area of a landing. So we started working. We started thinking that maybe they weren't using nuclear energy. Maybe they were using something a little bit more advanced. So what we tried to do, we tried to develop a time buffer delay for a generator. That delays the output of a generator by about 6 or 8 seconds. Then you change the characteristic of the current, the amperage, and the voltage, and put that through a linear amplifier, which drives the drive motor. So as long as all of this is working, the drive motor works and the generator continues to output. And if you have a good technician, you can build either a kilowatt, a megawatt, or a gigawatt output. Now, my question would be, we tried to sell this to the industry thinking that we were going to be millionaires, but nobody wanted it. Government did not want it. Industry did not want it. We were told that this was on the shelf for about 30 years because the concern was that it would cause massive, massive unemployment since so many people are related to the petroleum industry. Now, very simply, my question is, do your guests think that this propulsion system may be the type that is used since it is silent? It produces continuous energy that never ends until you turn a switch off. And do they think that it has any future for the American consumer with price gases up as high as they are? Thank you.
Okay, Joseph, before they answer, can I ask you this? Did you patent this thing?
No, we did not patent it, but I can tell you this, George. We found a car parts manufacturer in Dover, Delaware, and they told us they understood what the situation was, that you cannot market or sell or promote this in America. But they bought it. They bought the prototype from us. It produced 3,500 watts. And they cut a check for $10,000. Now, a couple of days after they cut the check, they were visited by the likes of the CIA, the FBI, and so forth and so on. And the government was apparently satisfied that they were going to put it into production, but they were going to sell it overseas. Other countries do not have these kind of laws.
Gentlemen, your thoughts on this this propulsion system he's describing?
I think it's a good point that there are low radiation levels at many of these landing sites, like Bentwaters, for instance. They didn't have, it's certainly a propulsion that seems to not have radiation. But it is a good question. What would a government do if they came up with they were posed with a free energy device? I mean, that would be very difficult for the economic state of the world to be able to introduce something like this. Would that cause them to kind of push it under the rug because they wouldn't want to be the people to create this sort of upheaval? I think that's a very, very interesting question. Of course, one that many people ask, like Dr. Greer, who has been working through the Orion Project on free energy devices such as this, and he says they ran into a lot of similar experiences like the caller has.
Well, you know, Antonio, I wouldn't put it past somebody in the government to quash new technology that would cause economic disruption. I guess the economic disruption would be temporary, though, terrible, but temporary, because eventually free energy would solve a lot of problems.
Right, and it's not just the government, right? It's basically what you're talking is the oil companies, and energy companies, which, according to many people, control the government anyway.
Yeah, it is the government.
Well, anyway, there's a symbiosis there. Well, the French, who've done extensive research on this phenomena, and the French government is one of the ones that had a more open and consistent policy over the years. They seem to believe that this they call it magnetohydrodynamics.
MHD, sure.
Yeah. MHD. They believe that's the type of energy that these objects use. Now, going back to the oil-producing countries, and I think this did come up briefly earlier in this interview, but I find it extremely interesting, was at that Global Competitiveness Forum in Saudi Arabia. I mean, of all places, Saudi Arabia, one of the most conservative societies in the world, fundamentalist Islamic society, but on the other hand, extremely rich, right, with lots of money and oil. And recently they do, I guess this is an annual meeting, the Global Competitiveness Forum, and they did a whole session, not just on astrobiology or SETI. Those things are safe now. Anybody can talk about it. There's life in outer space, there's new planets, whatever. This was on UFOs themselves. And they had a very distinguished panel, including Jacques Vallée, Stanton Friedman, Nick Pope,
Michio Kaku,
and being Saudi Arabia, of course, an Islamic scholar whose name I forgot right now, but we did post on our website, actually, the links to the lectures. And this fellow is an Islamic scholar from Egypt, I believe from Cairo University, which is one of the, has a very long tradition on Islamic theology. So to me, that was another sign, just like the Vatican, you know, did the famous Vatican newspaper, Osservatore Romano, when they did the interview with Funes and put it as a headline, you know, the extraterrestrial is my brother. That was clearly a signal from Vatican officials that it was okay to discuss this subject, that there was no contradiction, theologically speaking. Now we see Islam coming from the center of it, which is Saudi Arabia, devoting a whole session to it. So maybe they know something. Maybe they know that the era of oil eventually is going to come out, and we're going to have to replace this. And I it's going to happen sooner or later, but I guess they're trying to maximize their profit for as long as they can.
Hey, Joseph, thanks for the great call. That was really interesting. I wish I was technically proficient enough to comment about how good your idea sounds, but it's a little bit above my head. We're going east of the Rockies. Tom in Chattanooga. Good morning, Tom.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So I have a story I want to kind of tell you, and I'm curious as to – I have this – okay. Growing up, I lived in the middle of nowhere, Michigan, and I witnessed my grandmother's barn get struck by lightning 3 different times. And this one night, I went out to go get a drink of water, and I was looking out the window at my grandmother's barn, and the 3 different times I seen it get struck by lightning. And that's amazing that I seen it get struck by lightning 3 different times. But there was 5 lights shining down from the sky on my grandmother's barn, on the corner of my grandmother's barn, where it got struck by lightning. I was probably about 13. I freaked out. I couldn't talk for a while. I finally screamed for my father to come. My father came, and we watched. He came, and my whole family came, and we all looked at the sky, and we watched these 5 lights shine down on my grandmother's barn. And my mother went, and she finally got on the phone with my grandmother, who lived next door to us, whose barn it was. And we're watching these 5 lights shine down on my grandmother's barn. And my mother's trying to – my grandmother's like 70 or something, and she's asking, which windows do I look out? Which windows do I look out? My mother's trying to tell her, and finally she asked us, she says, like, are the lights still there? And we all turn, and we look at my mother, and we say, yes. And when we return back, the lights are gone. And from there on, like, I asked everybody in my family about this night, and nobody ever agreed it happened. And
no one could remember it, right?
Nobody remembered it. 22 years later, I am going through this horrible divorce, and I'm on this long conversation with my sister on the phone, and suddenly my sister is just, like, talking to me about different experiences, like ghosts that we grew up with. Like, my mom denies it exists, too. And suddenly my sister goes, you remember that night when there was, like, 3 lights shining down on Grandma's barn? And I was like, 5. And my sister just laughs. And she's like, what? And I said, 5. There was 5, and where have you been? Where have you been for the last 22 years? I feel like I've lost my mind. And so we, from that night, agreed that this happened. And me and her have since talked to my parents, and they still
don't remember
this ever happened. They denied this ever happened.
Tom, can I allow my guests? Can I allow the guests to sort of comment on what you've told us here so far?
Yes.
This idea of selective repressed memory. Antonio?
Yeah, very common.
Oh, go ahead, Alejandro, go ahead.
Just saying that's very, very common. I mean, I hear this a lot. And sometimes you wonder people believe that to be the case, and maybe you do too, that it's people denying the event. They don't want to think about this extraordinary event, so they just don't want to talk about it. Recently, I met someone who had a similar experience where his wife and some friends had had an extraordinary sighting. And his wife would not talk about it, which was very frustrating to him. But 10 years later or so, he ran across a group of friends who were there that night. And one of the friends said, you know, do you remember what happened that night? Wasn't that amazing? And he felt great because he felt, you know, like you, the caller, he felt, you know, am I going crazy? Did this really happen? And so he felt really good that this person had brought that up. But you hear this even among family members like this, you know, some either don't want to talk about it because they're repressing it. Or, of course, it could be that they've completely forgotten about it, because in some cases it does seem that, you know, someone will remember the incident, but others just genuinely will not recall the incident.
And what we don't know, Antonio, is whether it's the human mind reacting in this way on its own, just repressing something that's so strange and unsettling, or whether somebody else, the visitors or whatever, were able to selectively wipe it out or suppress the memory themselves, which that'd be a handy little technique to be able to master.
Right, and especially when we're dealing, nowadays there's so much more exposure to the phenomenon, right? In the first hour we were talking about the movies and the celebrities and the media and the internet, so it's different now. It's still a difficult and controversial subject, but, you know, there's much more points of reference. But when you go in the past, really, especially if it was something more traumatic or something where you actually saw a humanoid, it's almost to be expected. That was the case. It comes to mind, a friend of mine who's a well-known UFO researcher, Peter Robbins. Yeah, I'm sure you know him.
Sure.
And he and his sister had an incident when he was a kid, and he's spoken about this many times. I forgot, he was about 9 years old or something like that, and they were playing on the courtyard in their house in Long Island, New York. And he saw this formation of, I think it was five classical flying saucers, and they shot a beam, and he got hit by a beam and was basically knocked out. And then he remembers his sister was abducted. He was not abducted, by the way. They just knocked him out, but his sister was abducted. And then it's like they put it out of their system, you know. They never discussed this. And then, like, 20 years went by, or 15 years, whatever. And later, he became interested in UFOs. And somehow, I forgot the details, this story came out. He remembered for the first time in years. He had totally repressed. So his first thing was, well, did I make this up or what? So he called his sister, who was, by the way, a rock star, Helen Wheels. She unfortunately passed away a few years ago. Call her and said, you remember this? She was older. She was about 2-3 years older than him. And indeed, she confirmed it. And then later, she was put under hypnosis and all that, and she had a whole abduction scenario. But for like 15, 20 years, they had never discussed it.
Tom, I appreciate you making that call. It sounded like it was a difficult story for you to convey, but we appreciate you opening up to us. Try to get one more call in here, west of the Rockies. Mike in San Francisco. Good morning, Mike.
Hi, George, and hi, Alejandro and Antonio. Really great show. Quick reference to the first caller about the UFO law. I wonder if there's a speed limit included in there for UFOs.
That's a good one.
I do want to find out if you guys can at least direct me, if you don't have direct information, on the Battle of Los Angeles. Now, of course, there's a movie, Battle L.A., which was inspired, I believe, by this incident. I think it was in 1947. But I understand that one of the craft crashed in the San Bernardino Mountains, and there was a couple or three that were, or several that were seen over the L.A. area. But I'm curious if you know more specifics about where that particular craft crashed, like if it was near Crestline or Big Bear or, you know, Waterman Canyon, where that might have been. I used to live there, so I'm very curious about that. And also, George Norrie mentioned the other night the passing of Jose, and I did not get his last name, a member of the UFO community. I wonder if maybe you can mention a bit about him. Thank you very much for the show tonight.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep. I think that's Jose Escamilla you're referring to.
Oh, really? I wasn't even aware of him. Yeah, I knew him. I knew Jose Escamilla. He had worked on the Battle of Los Angeles
documentary.
Yeah, well, basically, this is a well-known incident, but there's two aspects of it. One is the official, the public aspect, and this was indeed in all the LA newspapers, and it was seen by many people, and this was right at the beginning of World War II, the American aspect of World War II, so after Pearl Harbor,
This was in February of 1942, not 1947. So the fear was that it was a Japanese raid, and they fired a lot of anti-aircraft, I think 1,500 rounds of ammunition or something like that. And later in the 1970s, there's a famous document which was written by the head of the chief of staff, General George C. Marshall, famous general, right? Later was Secretary of State, and is a secret report to FDR, where it confirms absolutely that this incident took place. However, the crash aspect, that is a little bit more nebulous. That is not confirmed officially. That comes in one of the latest batches of Majestic 12 documents. So that has a little baggage, if you believe in the Majestic 12 documents. But there are many incarnations of MJ-12 documents. There's the original ones, and then there's a more recent series that were published by the father and son team of the Woods, you know. So that's where that story comes from. As to where specifically it crashed, I don't remember right now, but we did publish an article by Richard Dolan, the famous historian and ufologist, in one of our earlier issues of Open Minds magazine, where he did discuss not just the general incident, but also the alleged crash.
So, yeah, that's a heck of... Yeah, Mike, I appreciate the call. That's a heck of an important case. I mean, still can't say for sure that I guess it is a UFO in the literal meaning of the term UFO, but it sure sounds like it was more than just errant planes up there.
Yeah, there's a photograph too. There's a famous photograph that was published in the Los Angeles Times, which I'm sure you can find it on the web.
The spotlights pointing up into the sky.
Yeah, the spotlights, right. Correct.
Now, on Jose Escamilla, back to that, and Alejandro, is it true? Did he pass away?
Oh, I didn't hear that he passed away. I think that he did something regarding Battle of Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's why he thought of that name. But I haven't heard. No, I saw him, in fact, fairly recently in California at a UFO meeting.
I'm sure we would have heard. There must be someone else who passed away called Jose. I can't remember right now. We've had, of course, many. It's that thing, you know, UFOs have been around now for long enough that, unfortunately, many of these people I knew personally are passing, you know, a whole generation is slowly fading away. Of course, we had Wendell Stevens last year, and also Zachariah Sitchin, one of the better-known authors on the historical aspect.
And guys, it makes you worry that we will pass away before we solve this mystery. Probably will be the case. It'll be a mystery long after we're gone. Alejandro Rojas, Antonio Janaez, thanks very much for the fascinating conversation. I hope people will go to Open Minds Productions and check out your stuff. Hope you had a good time.
We did.
Thank you. Definitely.
Thank you very much, George.
All right. And thank you also to Robert Knight, rock photographer. And to my friends Jason Bowers, Gina Salvati, and Tim Binal there at Coast to Coast for helping me get through the program. Thank you as well, and to all the callers, and I'll be back next month. Good night, everyone.